So I was noticing so many synchronicities, starting this morning with Regina's and Ruby's reading from our core values on through Barb's sharing, and just that. And I happened to glance while Barb was finishing up her program to where I will be beginning in Experience Your Perfect Soul. And it's going to be on page 118 for those of you that have the book. And it's about midway down. And the title of this particular section is called The Spiritual Idealist. And initially, when I glanced at that, I thought to myself, wow, how close is that to what Regina was sharing this morning about the spiritual ego? Only in this particular case, the spiritual idealist is being spoken of in a mystical sense, in a way where the study of idealism for this, it says the previous paragraph, for the sake of ridding ourselves of the finite. And it involves that movement towards the infinite. And it says, those of us who entered upon the study of idealism for the sake of ridding ourselves of the finite may rejoice that so early in our course we may be led by a type of idealist which denies God's authorship, the finite. And it made me think of that part in A Course in Miracles that tells us, you know, God did not make the world, that there is no world, that ultimately we give up the idea that this illusory world has any reality at all, yet we seem to move about in it as the channel through which this mystical but not mysterious force may flow. And so, you know, the idea of an idealist, typically, I looked up the word idealist while I was having a few minutes before Barb came on, and it says a person who is guided more by ideals than by practical considerations. And some synonyms for that are visionary, which, you know, might clearly point towards the mystic. But it also has the word dreamer, which in the case where Regina was speaking about the spiritual ego, where there's that the ego usurps the spiritual path and turns, let's just say, A Course in Miracles, for instance, into a creed or a doctrine that I then become fixed upon as if, you know, it is the only way, and I use that as a weapon of separation rather than the wisdom that it is. And so that is a example of, in a humanistic way, the ego subtly creeping into what starts out as a as the spiritual idealist's goal, which is to let go of all that clinging and, you know, insisting that my religion or my path or my method of practice or the way I meditate or, you know, whatever, the meaning I give to God, or I'm not going to say God, or I mean, there's a zillion ways that we can splinter our paths and use that in a very destructive way. And so I found it interesting that the words themselves, spiritual idealist, could be looked at in two different ways. One, in the way in which Regina was using it, or we are to be vigilant within ourselves for you know, maybe that preachy aspect that sometimes comes in, or that you know, that puffed up ego that wants to show somebody what I know, or that eager beaver that wants to be the one in the crowd that everybody turns to and says, "Whoa, I mean, they seem to get it." We all, I've been that one. So, and I suspect I will probably make more mistakes along that way, but it is helpful to be more aware of those pitfalls. And yet, in this particular section, and this section is from Catherine Piedrick, which is chapter 4, and the quotes from by Catherine Piedrick are from the book called The Practical Mystic. The Practical Mystic. So again, reflecting, living in the world, and allowing ourselves to be used as the conduit through which grace flows. And the last piece of that practical mystic is how to make perfection appear. And if there's an appearance, I mean, again, there's that human form giving permission to pure awareness that its vessel be used purely. And being mindful that I don't know what that means. I don't know beyond that. I don't have to know. And so I thought it was also interesting that our particular section that we had to read for our gentle healing group, self-concept versus self, or self versus self-concept. Self-concept versus self is what it is in chapter 31, ends with this particular paragraph. The world can teach no images of you unless you want to learn them. There will come a time when images have all gone by and you will see you know not what you are. It is to this unsealed and open mind that truth returns. Unhindered and unbound. Where concepts of the self have been laid by, is truth revealed exactly as it is? When every concept has been raised to doubt and question, and been recognized as made on no assumptions that would stand the light, then is the truth left free to enter in its sanctuary, clean and free of guilt? There is no statement that the world is more afraid to hear than this: I do not know the thing I am, and therefore do not know what I'm doing, where I am, or how to look upon the world. Or on myself. Yet in this learning is salvation born, and what you are will tell you of itself. Again, I do not know. So we remember vigilantly, I don't know, I have no idea. So I ask in all things and remain open for the purity to flow through without having to know anything. I mean, what a relief that is. So, okay, we're going to start on page 118 in Experience Your Perfect Soul. And these quotes are selected by Michael Langford from Catherine Piedrick. So this particular section again is called The Spiritual Idealist. So the spiritual idealist would have us dwell upon the truth of this knowing power, which is distinct from the finite. Lest we become blind to it and the priceless significance of our possession of it. So, again, urging us not to become blind to the priceless significance that we have, we are in possession of, not in a way of like individual ownership, but we are melded as part of this knowing power. It is inherent as a treasure, and we simply open to that treasure. But it is distinct from, you know, this finite sense of words that, you know, try to express what that is. It's an infinite knowing power. It comes from beyond intelligent explanation or thinking. Thus, the spiritual idealist would have us see that not only a divine power to know is expressing itself in us, but that the whole infinite mind is accessible to each of us. For this mind images itself in the individual consciousness as a divine power to know, to love, and to act apart from the finite. And I'm going to read that one more time. Thus, the spiritual idealist would have us see that not only a divine power to know is expressing itself in us, but that the whole infinite mind is accessible to each of us. For this mind images itself in the individual consciousness as a divine power to know, a divine power to love, a divine power to act, apart from the finite. This type of idealist dwells primarily upon our divine power to know, and upon the necessity of our becoming awake to this power. Because divine loving is something to which we should strive to attain. My husband made a funny statement to me this morning. He said, you know, let me think about it just real quickly. Something like, nobody ever got too fat feasting on love. You know, nobody ever got too fat in the sense of, you know, where it's unhealthy or unattractive had some sort of, nobody ever got fat feasting on too much love, giving too much love, absorbing too much love, soaking in too much love. Nobody ever got, you know, too fat on that. And it was just kind of a funny statement. I don't know what made him say that, but it kind of, you know, one of those things that catches your attention. Yeah. Yeah. Divine loving. But we have not yet realized with the force Yeah, somehow this sentence is kind of throwing me for a bit of a loop. I'm just going to read it and see what happens. So it says, I'm going to go back one paragraph and then just continue on. This type of idealist dwells primarily upon our divine power to know and upon the necessity of our becoming awake to this power, because divine loving is something to which we should strive to attain. But we have not yet realized with the force we might that each of us is a divine capacity. which is ever operating, to be conscious of life's knowing, loving, and acting. So I, at least this is how it sounds to me. This force, this divine power to know, this divine loving, we haven't realized yet that each of us has a divine capacity which is always operating to be conscious, of life's knowing, loving, and acting. That same divine capacity can be smothered and covered. Can be, you know, the blocks to love's presence. The external focus, the attention misdirected externally. I mean, the many ways, the distractions, the detours, the spiritual ego. There's a zillion different ways that move us out of realization, not in truth, but in experience. But this is telling us that this divine capacity, it's only, I'm going to say, force, if you want to call it that, is that it be conscious of life's knowing, life's loving, and life's acting. And you know, not in a sense where we identify at the acting portion of it, of necessarily, you know, a moving about in the world. While it can take that form while we still think we're in the world, it's the divine, the full, pure, divine expression of that being as life. It's perfection. Even if it appears to be acting in the world. That's how I see that. Let me take a quick drink of water here. Are you guys still with me? Thank you, Cheryl. You know, the reason I call this no fluff is because it reads to me as no fluff. There's nothing extraneous, and I'm always hopeful that my sharing reflects that as well. Not too much fluff going on. Okay. This means, upon our part, consciousness of the truth, loving that of which we are conscious. Oh gosh, beautiful. And putting it into action or expressing it. And to me, that speaks, we've been reading, I've been part of the A Course of Love group on Wednesday mornings. Carrie Christensen facilitates that group. I've been part of that group from the very beginning. And gosh, I think we've been at it, I don't know, it's got to be a year and a half or so now. Very much speaking, that book speaks to the integration of mind, body, and divinity in the most loving of ways. And that's what this sentence speaks of, where our attention is fully placed with the consciousness of truth, loving that of which we are conscious. You know, we can use the loving all method or the loving consciousness method. You know, if we're involved in activity, we use the loving all method. And the loving consciousness activity is minus, I mean, the loving consciousness method is minus the activity portion of it. Or we can simply sit down for awareness, watching awareness, in a chair or wherever it is we choose to close our eyes as practice. Loving that of which we are conscious. Loving that of which we are conscious. And putting it into action. I mean, that's the point. Or expressing it, somehow expressing that, extending that. And it's in the extension that there's the recognition within myself, the sense within myself, the love within myself that's felt in a visceral way, even if it's not accepted, seemingly, in some way that's seen. I can know and be assured that the love within that other being has accepted that love, whether it's seen or not. It has to be accepted. It has to. Thus, the spiritual idealist would lead us out of the realm of mystery into the realm of spiritual understanding. So there's that understanding in a situation where you decide to be loving, even when someone else is seemingly not being loving, but you extend that anyway, and you're the first point of the reception of that love, the strength of that love, the feeling of that love, the peace of that love. There's only gain there, only. And there's no expectation about how it's received because you have a spiritual understanding that the Christ within, the bee or the rock or the person or the cockroach receives your love. Doesn't matter how it's acting. We look beyond that to the truth. Consciousness of the truth. The spiritual idealist has already arrived at the point where he realizes that every son of man belongs to a super sensuous world. And such knowing involves a distinction between his true self and the mortal sensuous personality. He realizes to a certain extent the worth of the spiritual and looks upon the physical body as necessarily allied to the sensuous, and so at variance with the pure and spiritual life. And for some reason, that part in A Course in Miracles where it speaks of very early on, maybe in the first three chapters or so, where we can have a miracle impulse and the spiritual ego will usurp that impulse and distort it into a sexual impulse, for instance. That's what came to me when I read that sentence. He realizes to a certain extent the worth of the spiritual and looks upon the physical body as necessarily allied to the sensuous, and so at variance with the pure and spiritual life. And that's the end of that particular section called The Spiritual Idealist. And the next piece of it is called The Nature of Unreality as Seen by the Spiritual Idealist. The Nature of Unreality. So the new order of mystic reduces the universe to two insulated minds, the material and the spiritual. These two realms are mutually exclusive, and by their natures are free from one another. But what does such a reduction mean? It means that the physical laws of the finite, the material order, do not hold in the spiritual order. That matter, the substance of the material realm, is not the substance of the spiritual realm. That the ideals of the spiritual kingdom are antagonistic to the ideals of the material kingdom. That these two systems, therefore, cannot work together, and obedience to the one means disobedience to the other. That which the divine mind excludes is untrue and unreal, and therefore the finite sense, its conceptions, and the material world are unreal, our illusion. I was speaking with a dear friend of mine a couple of days ago, a longtime Course in Miracles student, and he was talking about beliefs, and he was speaking about a particular belief that he had recognized as untrue, and we had a conversation about beliefs, and I was sharing with him just that daunting realization that there is not one exception that can be made for any belief that is held or any concept that is held within the finite world, including, you know, those that we would consider spiritual or good or positive, you know, any belief. It doesn't matter. It seems like Jay was talking this morning about, you know, homelessness. Becky was talking about homelessness. And I was reflecting on that as you guys were both speaking to that, because we here in Southern California, there has been just a very noticeable encampment of tents along the expressway, you know, the 57 and the 5 freeways. There has just, near Anaheim Stadium, there has just arisen, you know, quite a large number of homeless tents. And so at one point, it was very visible from the expressway, and seemingly causing some problems with the traffic. And as some of you may know, I mean, traffic in LA is or any part of Southern California is challenging enough as it is without people gawking at the you know, the rise of a homeless community underneath in kind of like what would be considered like a washway. When it rains, those people are in deep trouble. But what happened was the DOT apparently decided to address that. And on the expressway side, they put huge mounds of dirt so that it's no longer visible in an obvious way. And so that came to mind as you guys were both talking about how we have beliefs around the homeless. And I was, Jay was speaking about, you know, the reasons why some people might be homeless and all of that. And, you know, it's, I was noticing within my own mind how it wants to split even the idea of homelessness into good homeless people and then just, you know, the lazy and the lazy homeless people, the people that simply don't want to work and just want to hang out, you know, by the beach and beg, you know, for somebody else's, whatever. I mean, that can be splintered in a zillion different ways. And the focus here is that I look beyond that. Would a healed mind be splintering this brother that I'm labeling homeless? Would a healed mind see him in any way as other than the truth of what he is? What am I looking at? Where am I coming from? What am I believing? And do I know? Do I have any clue on how to solve the problem of homelessness? Is it a problem? So when I notice myself involved in any way in a story, my attention has been distracted by an external problem, and I'm to ask within. Yeah, that which the divine mind excludes. Do you think, you know, do we think that the divine mind is going to violate the laws of cause and effect and step in to, you know, change the circumstance, the external circumstance? Or does the divine mind allow, accept, stay centered, remember the truth? What is the divine nature? Who am I? Yeah. Yeah, Jay says the practice for me is about watching the mind. Of course, the mind will judge that is its job. And the more I catch and let go of judgment, the more my mind becomes quiet, for sure. These, you know, seemingly complex problems in the world can draw our attention as well as our, you know, discussion. We want to discuss this ad nauseum. And if the guidance is to act, so be it. But ask, because I don't know. I don't know. Therefore, I don't need to judge, and I don't need to have an opinion. I just need to recognize, where is my attention? Am I believing my own thought? They're not even my own thoughts. Am I believing thought? Am I believing this? And here it is telling us that which the divine mind excludes is untrue and it's unreal. And it's therefore the finite sense, which is not the infinite sense. And the conceptions within the finite sense, the material world, it's unreal, it's illusion. And we're asked not to forget that. Don't forget that. So the next piece is called The Spiritual Idealist's Remedy for the Illusion Called Evil. By the full light of spiritual vision, we see all the ills of human life as the result of illusion, false sense, and know that only good and the spiritual are true. It's Michael Langford's choice A or choice B. Choice A or choice B. And this is saying, by the light, by the full light of spiritual vision, we see all the ills of human life as the result of illusion, false sense, and know that only good and the spiritual are true. It is only through such understanding that evil can be corrected, and the good, the beautiful, and the spiritual be made to appear in our lives. The realization of truth is that which gives us life and freedom from untruth. While to hold as true false conceptions concerning reality is death. Listen to what that's saying. To hold as true false conceptions concerning real reality with a capital R, that's death. That's death. So when we don't question our beliefs, when we're like so fixed on an idea that when somebody is, you know, maybe sharing that they think differently about it, and in your mind, there's almost like this, you know, that sense of la, 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 where you don't even hear them. There's no listening at all. You completely block it off as soon as you hear that piece that you disagree with, and the mind starts up immediately, you know, with your own thought about why, you know, oh, well, that's a bunch of bull. And, you know, then you go off in your own head. And if you're going off in your own head, listening to that voice that's screaming at you in the moment, to look at these thoughts, look at these thoughts, look at these thoughts. They're different than hers. They're different than hers. And she's wrong. If you're there, you have blocked off any opportunity for purity to arise within you, for being open. You don't have to agree. You simply are open. Compassionate. Wouldn't you hope the same? I mean, perception is a selective process. That means by its very nature, my perception is different than your perception. How can we be so rigid around the idea of perception that we fail to remember? We set it up to be restrictive. We set it up to show differences. We set it up so that someone else can think differently than I can. And then what? We're going to turn it into a weapon too? Simply allow the difference and remember the truth, which is always the same. There's no splintering at all within truth. It's simply true. And that's where my attention is being asked to be focused. You know, I see what's going on here. I feel myself getting riled up. I feel myself so wanting to spew what I have to say. I so feel that urge to, you know, say something spiritual. And, you know, if I share my wisdom, they might look at me like, oh, wow, that's something new to consider. Then I can get that, you know, little boost of whatever. Yeah, like, you know, we have to correct somebody, even if it's in our loving spiritual way. Oh, how grand we are. Yeah. Holding as true false conceptions concerning reality. That's death. That's like lying to ourselves. No self-honesty going on there. This is what reality is. I know what reality is. There is a new understanding. There is a new understanding then to be gained, in the light of which old misconceptions vanish like a mist. The sun does not battle with dark powers, but stands radiant, conscious only of its own light. And by reason of this, the clouds, even if ever so dense, are ultimately dissipated. Yesterday's awareness, watching awareness meditation suggestion in Regina's tip was the letter S, meditation S. And that meditation asked us to rest, to relax, to use the meditation time to relax, to let go of the mind, and to be aware of what you're aware of, and turn that awareness around and away from what you seem to be aware of, such as thought. Any sort of, you know, busyness that might be occurring in the mind, you're aware of that. Use that same awareness and turn that awareness around to the awareness that is aware only of itself. And that's what this particular line, the sun does not battle with dark powers, but stands radiant, conscious only of its own light, awareness aware of itself. And by reason of this, the clouds, even if ever so dense, are ultimately dissipated. So when we take our attention, when we are take our attention off of the thoughts, off of what seems to be distracting the awareness, and turn it around towards what is aware only of itself. That's what this is the new understanding. This is where the new understanding arises. But first, we have to, you know, let the old misconceptions, the clouds, the thoughts, the stories that arise, whatever the busyness in the mind that seems to occur, we let that go. Misfortune, and that's in quotes, is the sequence of our lack of realization of the possession of a truth-knowing capacity, which, in reality, is always present and always operating. And it, you know, misfortune. Is it really a misfortune? Only in my experience, in my human experience. The divine doesn't have experience as I understand experience as a human. So this idea of misfortune says it's the sequence of our lack of realization. We just don't really realize that we are in possession of a truth-knowing capacity that is reality. It's always present, and it's always operating. And this is all about encouraging us to simply be aware of that. There's a line in A Course in Miracles that says something like, "You're much too tolerant of mind wandering. Much too tolerant of mind wandering. Lazy." You know, it's a laziness. We think if, you know, things are good and I'm not really suffering all that much and, you know, the deal of the day is not, there's nothing really going on and things seem to be pretty groovy and, you know, everything's pretty good. Are we vigilant? Or do we find ourselves, you know, just a little bit flippant about our practice, flippant about our dedication, our devotion, our earnestness? I don't know. We each have to ask within ourselves. Let us remember that neither sorrow, nor fear, nor any evil is necessary to our progress toward truth knowing. Love that line. Let us remember that neither sorrow, nor fear, nor any evil is necessary to our progress toward truth knowing. That no cruel taskmaster is inflicting pains upon us against which we have no refuge and out of which we have no escape, but that all the blame for this needlessly sad world lies in misconceptions which will not present themselves if we, by searching, come to realize what truth is. In time of sorrow, to absorb one's mental powers in pleasure, or even in profitable pursuits, for the purpose of forgetting and for silencing that earnest questioning in our hearts, is but to delay the finding of just that truth which we can and must know if we would save ourselves and others too from this same valley of suffering through which we are now passing. And Muji, Ken played a 20-minute Muji audio, and I think it was, maybe it was today's Muji audio, or maybe it was another day, but somebody's audio at any rate was, you know, speaking about how in times of sorrow, this is saying, to absorb one's mental powers in pleasure or even in profitable pursuits for the purpose of forgetting. So, you know, some people throw themselves into their work when they're upset. It's a distraction where their attention is placed somewhere else, which, you know, kind of sweeps the problem under the rug for a period of time until it arises, possibly, down the road in another form, but it's still the core issue underneath it has not been resolved. Or, in a pleasurable sense, some people drink, some people do drugs, some people have a lot of sex, some people, I don't know, whatever ways we seem to want to pleasure ourselves, drown our sorrows, numb our sorrows for the purpose of forgetting. And it's a momentary forgetting. I mean, we'd have to be completely insane not to notice at some point that it's a temporary solution. And I put that in quotes because it's not a solution. It's just another delay measure, because we don't want to go within and look. We don't want to earnestly question what's in our hearts, because sometimes it's not very pretty. We don't want to be honest and say, right now I'm feeling very hateful. Or very jealous. Or very depressed. Or very unhappy. Lest we upset someone else, as if they don't know already. And so we maneuver in so many different ways. Deny, disguise. I think it's lesson 333 in A Course in Miracles. Let me turn to it real quick, because it gives a wonderful list right off the bat. Let's see. Yeah, it says conflict must be resolved. It cannot be evaded, set aside, denied, disguised, seen somewhere else, called by another name, or hidden by deceit of any kind. It be escaped. It must be seen exactly as it is, where it is thought to be, in the reality which has been given it, and with the purpose that the mind accorded it. For only then are its defenses lifted, and the truth can shine as it disappears. And that particular lesson is, forgiveness ends the dream of conflict here. And so this is saying it in just different words. Again, in time of sorrow, to absorb one's mental powers in pleasure, or even in profitable pursuits for the purpose of forgetting and for silencing that earnest questioning in our hearts, is but to delay the finding of just that truth which we can and must know if we would save ourselves and others too from this same valley of suffering through which we are now passing. It is not so much what truths we know, as it is the activity of truth knowing, which enables us to bring to light existing perfection. The practical value, however, of any true thought, the dynamic force of it, depends entirely upon one's realization of its truth. And this realization of spiritual truth does not come by itself. It comes by voluntary practice in realization. This is our day prayer. It is the going up into the mountain, this getting away in thought from the sense world every day, if only for an hour. As our daily concentration begins to make us more fully aware of our divine knowing power, we shall begin to realize more and more the true significance of spirit ideas. And then our finite knowing power will take offense and will hasten to be on the defensive. And in proportion to the disclosure of the logical conclusions involved in true ideas, will the feud, which has always existed between the material and the spiritual, it'll make itself felt. Conflict between the two is inevitable. A truce is impossible. If necessary, this antagonism between the mortal sense and the divine knowledge, feelings, and will be forced upon us by sin, suffering, and sorrow. But instead, it may be revealed as a result of daily training. And I'm going to stop right there because my time is up. But again, it stops by telling us it can be revealed by daily training, not forced upon us by sin, suffering, and sorrow, guys, just by daily training. Let's take the easy path. Choice A or choice B, up to us. Thanks.